Welcome to the Real Estate Guys radio program. You're going to spend a lot of time as a real estate investor acquiring assets. You better make sure they're protected. We're going to talk asset protection today from lots of different angles, and you're going to dig it on the Real Estate Guys radio program.
Stop for a moment. Why are you listening to this show? Are you dreaming of a bigger, brighter financial future? More personal freedom to live life on your own terms? What if there was just one skill that could make it happen? There is. Sales. Robert Kiyosaki says every entrepreneur must be good at sales. It's true for investors too. Sales is how you attract money, people, and opportunities. Sales is the skill used to negotiate deals and lead your team. Sales skills are essential to success. The good news is, it's a learnable skill. The great news is, we've created a two-day interactive workshop to teach those skills to you. Make plans today to attend How to Win Funds and Influence People, Mastering the Art of Financial Selling. For dates and details, send an email to sales@realestateguysradio.com or visit realestateguysradio.com and look under events. Gain the skills you need to succeed. Email sales@realestateguysradio.com or look under the events tab at realestateguysradio.com.
Welcome to the Real Estate Guys radio show. I'm your host, Robert Helms. Joining me as usual, co-host, financial strategist, Russell Gray.
Hey, Robert.
You know, real estate investors spend their entire life wanting to invest in real estate, then investing in real estate, and then, if they do it right, protecting the real estate. And that's the part sometimes people forget about. We are in a stage at the beginning where we're acquiring assets, and we are more concerned about preserving capital and making the right decisions and learning markets and learning strategies and all the stuff we normally talk about. But once you build up your assets, you need to make sure they're protected. There's a lot of ways to do that. Ironically, the time to think about that stuff is really before you acquire them.
Absolutely. You don't necessarily want to go buy insurance after you need to make a claim. You don't want to take whatever preemptive steps you're going to take in order to prevent an accident after it's occurred, right?
Right.
So it's common sense. But with that said, you know, it's awfully hard. Real estate investors and business people in general tend to be optimists. That's why they go out and take risks. They expect things to go well. A lot of times they don't count the cost and they don't assess the risks properly. Part of being a good business person, being a good investor, is actually doing a good risk assessment. And so once you're aware of the risks, the next question is well, how do I mitigate some of those risks? But a lot of times we run off and we just expect sunshine and unicorns. And if everything goes well, it goes well. We don't even know that we had a vulnerability. And then when something goes wrong, that's often when our weaknesses are exposed. And the challenge is, just like a reputation, you can spend an entire lifetime building a portfolio and then make one stupid mistake or have one thing go not your way, somebody else's stupid mistake, and everything you spent a lifetime building is gone. And so a sound risk mitigation, which is bigger. And when you hear asset protection, everybody thinks, oh, that's just lawyers, that's entities. That's part of it. But there's other things that are also part of it. We're going to try and take all those pieces of the puzzle and put them together here in non-lawyer terms so that people who are out there trying to put these things together understand what all the different tools are, what all the different strategies are, and how do we put them all together into an integrated risk mitigation plan as a real estate investor.
Well, in fact, specifically today, we do not have an attorney on the program. We have lots of great attorneys in our life. You've met many of them on the show here, and we could have easily asked one to be sitting beside us. But this show is not about legal asset protection. That's going to be a subset of it. This show is about mentally how I prepare myself to acquire assets and make sure they're protected. So the disclaimer we have is Russ and I are not attorneys, and we're not giving you advice. These are just ideas and information. At the end of the show, there may be some action steps for you, and one of the action steps may be to talk to counsel.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to need a lot of technical advisors because there's a lot of technicalities to this particular business. You know, if you're building a boat and you want to make sure that it's going to hold water and transport the cargo that you're wanting to transport, you better have a bevy of engineers on staff who understand the structural integrity of the ship and the pressures it's going to be faced in terms of torquing and wind and weight and all that stuff. If you don't know how to do that, and most people aren't going to know how to do that, you just know, hey, I just want my ship to get me from point A to point B. Same thing if you're doing a development project. Hey, you work with the architect and you want to design this pretty building building based on a picture, you better have structural engineers who know how to build a building that will actually support the weight and withstand the conditions that building is going to exist in. It's no different with your portfolio. When you're building a fortress around your family, if you will, or around your assets, you better have technical advisors who understand down to the gnat's eyelash how all these components work. The big challenge, and hopefully what we accomplish in this show, is how do you get these different people to all integrate? So really, this is a lot like being a real estate developer, where you have to take different disciplines and put them all together in order to create a functional building, an attractive building. So there's aesthetics, there's lifestyle decisions you have to make, but you also have structural things, legal compliance things, and you have to put all of that together into a finished product. As a developer, you have to stand above the details and see the big pictures, and you have to get technical input from your experts.
An architect knows the strength of a triangle. That's a shape that has inherent strength in it because of the way it's built. We think about a triangle that looks like this. On one end of the triangle, say the top, you have tax and taxation. And there's a lot of great tax benefits for real estate. On another part of the triangle, you have asset protection. How do I protect the assets I build? And at the other end of the triangle, you have privacy. And so as a real estate investor, I'm interested in all those things, but at different stages of my investing career, some are more important than others. Starting out, probably the most important thing is not paying too much in tax, because if I pay it in tax, I don't have it to invest. So I look at all the great tax benefits of real estate, and I design my portfolio in such a way that I'm taking advantage of those tax loopholes, tax laws, the things I can do legally to make sure I minimize my tax exposure. I have that obligation to myself and my investors and my family anyway, but I'm focused on that. Once we've acquired some assets, that's when you start thinking about, ooh, I better protect these assets. I better make sure I have the asset protection structures in place. I've got the right insurances, and we'll talk a bit about that. And then I get to where I have a substantial portfolio, and all of a sudden, I may be worried even more about privacy, about keeping my assets private. Now, there are things you can do that will benefit both, but often as you make decisions as a real estate investor, you'll have to compromise one of those. I might compromise tax to have better asset protection, and the people you're dealing with are going to have different advice. This is why we don't have a professional with us today. Your attorney looks at asset protection as an entity. I'm going to form an entity. I'm going to make sure you've got the right entity, the right jurisdiction, and your assets are going to be held correctly within an entity. Okay. Your insurance broker says, well, no. I'm going to mitigate risk through insurance. I'm going to sell you insurance. I'm going to show you other policies. I'm going to make sure you have the right deductible, you have the right policy, the right coverages, and you're going to maybe have a coverage counsel to check out that policy. Your construction guy is going to say, no. I'm going to build the strongest property necessary. The property manager says, no, I'm going to make sure it's legally rented correctly. So everyone on your team has a different way to help you protect your assets. Your job as quarterback is to take counsel from all of them and then make the decisions that make the most financial sense for you.
So Stephen Covey and his book, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, brings up one of the effective habits being always begin with the end in mind. So, well, it's true that you can go build a portfolio and you can start in business and you can do all these different things and backfill some of these things down the road. During the period of time that you don't have these things in place, you do have some vulnerabilities. That's one issue.
Well, and a quick aside there, that may happen for you today as you're listening to the show. You may get the oops thing that happens in your life, like, right? That's okay. You can go back and fix most of this. Maybe not if you just got served with a lawsuit. You probably can't go back and now unwind it the way you wanted to. But absent a scenario like that, you should be in good shape. Just take the information you get today and go turn that into some professional advice.
Well, and sometimes there are challenges because when you want to restructure the title on a particular property for a particular purpose, you may trigger a tax event or you may negate an insurance policy, or you may trigger an acceleration clause in a loan. And so there's a lot of different things to think about. So to me, if you have the opportunity, and today is always the earliest day that you're going to get wherever you are at in your progression, is to sit down and try to figure out how can you create an integrated plan and understand the foundation of what is a risk mitigation structure. And then as you begin to accumulate assets, you know how to hold title and what kind of insurance to buy and where to have the mailing address and which jurisdictions you want to operate in and how you're supposed to sign documents to make sure that you have your corporate formalities. It can be overwhelming, but it doesn't have to be. And if we do our job on this episode today, what we're going to do is break it down in such a way that you have a core understanding of the basic structures, the principles, and then you know who you need to go to get the technical advice, and then you have the correct mental attitude, which is the understanding that you are going to be having to reconcile differences of opinion between your technical advisors, who, Robert, as you just mentioned, are going to have a different idea about what the priorities are. So the very first thing you're going to have to do as the developer of your portfolio and the structure you're going to build around it to protect it is what is most important to you. And that's going to be unique to you. If you are a celebrity, if you're a high profile person, if you have everybody out there wanting to look at you because you're a low hanging fruit, you're an easy target, right? Somebody says, oh, I'm going to go break check that Bentley because if that guy hits me, he's got great insurance and I'm going to sue him, right? They're not going to do that to the guy in the 1972 Pinto that's just barely running, right? You understand what I'm saying? So if you are a person of means and you're in the public eye, privacy might be your most important thing. You're willing to pay a price, maybe in tax, to do that. If you have, from an investment philosophy perspective, you decide, hey, I want to be diverse. I'm going to be across state lines or maybe across international borders. Well, your structure is going to be quite a bit more complicated than somebody says, oh, I'm just going to invest in my backyard. So there is no one size fits all answer, but we're going to break this thing up into the core components and we'll discuss each of them. And then at the end, you'll have an idea what the finished product can look like for you, some of the things you're going to be challenged with and who you're going to need on your team to help you implement.
We're talking about asset protection and risk mitigation. We've got lots more when we come back. You're tuned to the Real Estate Guys radio program. I'm your host, Robert Helms.
Live nationwide, you're listening to the Real Estate Guys. Find out more at realestateguysradio.com.
Are you achieving everything you want in life? What if there was a time-tested way for you to get everything you've dreamed of? The most successful people in life set goals and keep themselves accountable. But how? The good news is that it's not rocket science. You too can learn the skills and unleash the motivation that will create success in your life. And now is the time. Hi, this is Robert Helms. I'd like to personally invite you to attend Create Your Future, the 2017 Goals Retreat, January 6th through 8th in beautiful San Diego, California. This unique weekend has been called phenomenal, inspirational, and life-changing by the hundreds of people that have attended. Find out more at realestateguysradio.com and click events or call 888-489-7723, extension 18. Get your life back on track physically, spiritually, and financially. Attend the 2017 Goals Retreat on the first weekend of the new year. Click events at realestateguysradio.com to register. This is no dress rehearsal. Live the life you were meant to. Visit realestateguysradio.com or call 888-489-7723, extension 18, today.
Hello, Robert Kiyosaki. Listen to the Real Estate Guys. They're wild and crazy, but they really know what they're talking about.
Welcome back to the Real Estate Guys radio program, heard every weekend on this fine radio station, all the time at realestateguysradio.com and your finer podcast venues. We're talking today about asset protection, and not from the legal point of view solely, but the idea that over time you're going to acquire assets in your portfolio, and you want to make sure you keep them safe and secure and warm and cuddly. And I think the place to start is really with the mindset of this. You know, you alluded to this early in the program, Russ, but it's critical to understand that the majority of real estate investors are excited about building wealth. They're excited about the deal. They're optimists. They're out there finding opportunity, looking for great places to put money and magnify it and bring it back with friends and create returns for them and their family and their friends and some people even for other people through syndication. And they don't necessarily focus on all the bad things that could happen. But a balanced strategy is always just to understand the more real estate you own, the more likely something will happen. In a few weeks, you're going to hear our Halloween Horror Stories episode that we do every year, which is a whole bunch of things that went wrong in real estate investing, most of which nobody saw coming. But you're also going to learn the lessons people got. And there's a lot of those lessons. So things, if they haven't gone wrong yet for you, they will, right? Our friend Garrett Sutton always has people when he in an audience, he'll say, how many of you have been sued? And people raise their hands. And then he says, okay, how many of you haven't been sued yet? And he makes a very strong point that, you know, it's coming. So we have to, from the beginning, think that we want everything to go well, but we better prepare as though it might not.
Well, so my new favorite George Ross quote is, the higher up the ladder you go, the more you're rear end is exposed. And so as you're climbing the ladder of success, just understand the more you do that, the more your assets, if you will, are exposed. Yes. And so you want to make sure that you are building a structure around it, which is, of course, the theme of the show.
So when you start, you're going to buy a property. You're going to take the prudent measures. So asset protection starts with things like inspections, making sure inspecting the quality of the property, the safety standards, understand the neighborhood and what might be issues there, what kind of insurance on the home are available, those kinds of things, not just looking at the rents and the returns. There's folks that get all enamored of spreadsheets, and that's important. It's got to have a financial return or you don't want to do it. But you're also going to want to be looking at the physicality of the property and potential. In the United States, and of course we have listeners in more than 190 countries, in this particular country we're recording from, the United States of America this week, there's a huge reality of litigation here, and people sue people for anything they want at any time for any reason. And because of that, we live in this litigious society. We have to be thinking about things like trip and fall and what happens if my tenants get hurt on my property and all those things. And so again, not to be overwhelming, just your mindset needs to be going in. I'm going to be looking for all the great possible upside, and I'm going to be aware of the potential downside.
Well, it really maybe falls in the category of just making sure you understand the risks of the particular asset. And risk also comes in responsibility. You have a responsibility to your tenants. You have a responsibility to your community, maybe inside of an HOA or other type of organization. If you have a commercial building and you're part of an organization, you have responsibilities. And so with those responsibilities are liabilities, because if something needs to be done, you have to do it. If you don't do it and something bad happens because you didn't do it, now you are the potential beneficiary or recipient, if you will, of a nasty from an attorney and maybe something worse. So good business practices, just making sure you understand your responsibilities and fulfilling your responsibilities and making sure that you have adequate capitalization, reserves, and the things that you need, the right people on your team to operate whatever property and execute the responsibilities you have is a great starting point. We call it, you know, basically the good deal defense, and not a good deal from the standpoint of other investors, but just good business practices.
Yeah. And then you have what, you know, we talk about inspections, what we call due diligence, which is just making sure everything checks out. And that's kind of a wide topic, but your responsibility to yourself and your investors is to make sure that you've vetted as much as you can. Now, here's a reality. Most of the things that go wrong, you can't do diligence around. When you listen to Halloween Horror Stories in a few weeks, there's many of those things that there's no way they could have saw coming, because we're going to have actual investors sharing the stories, which is our favorite part of doing the show. For the first several years, it was just us lamenting our own Halloween horror stories. And now, thankfully, most of the horror stories come from others. But there's always a lesson in there. So knowing that things can and often do go wrong isn't to scare you away from real estate investing. Not at all. It's to say, am I going in eyes wide open?
Yeah. I mean, you can't understand a risk that you don't understand. I look at it like this. If you can imagine you're going to walk out on a minefield and there's buried mines, and you have the opportunity to talk with somebody who has already walked through that minefield, both the people who successfully navigated and the people that stepped on a few. And assuming that the landmines that we're talking about are not one and done, but somebody else could step on it like you, in other words, you can step in something that somebody else already stepped in, then I would want to have the opportunity to benefit from the experience of both the people that won and lost making their way through that minefield. So investing in some degrees can be a minefield. Of course, the reward for successfully traversing it is great profit, great reward, and that's why we do it. But the idea that you can just dance through that thing without paying any attention is a little naive. And so we want to make sure that you go in with your eyes wide open when you step out into that field.
So a basic building block of asset protection is the way you hold title to a property. And in case you've never heard this before, no investor left behind. Although occasionally there's a reason to hold a property in your personal name, there certainly aren't too many of those. We have, in most of the jurisdictions that we're able to invest in across this great planet, the idea of entity structure. So as our financial strategist, Russ, just talk about what an entity is and why you might want to use one.
Well, you know, an entity is basically a construct under the law that is a legal entity that can act like a human being for the purposes of owning and operating an asset or a business. And that's really all it is. That's what a corporation is. That's what a limited liability company company is. That's what a foundation is. That's what a trust is. So they're just these legal constructs. And typically in real estate, we're going to be using limited liability companies. But, you know, again, consult with your particular attorney. But the point is that you separate you as an individual, a natural person, if you will, from these entities. And then you can have entities that actually perform different functions.
Yeah.
So you can have an entity that holds assets. And typically that entity is going to be like a treasure box. It's a safe deposit box. I put the things that are valuable in it, but I don't give anybody the key. I don't let anybody know where it is. I try to be as private as I can about it. And it owns the things that are actually out there doing business. So an entity can own the shares of another entity. And so you would create maybe another entity to be the operating company. And this is the company that's going to own the property and operate the property and collect the rents and deal with the tenants. But because it's conducting business with third parties, it has liability exposure. It creates liability because if something goes wrong, they're going to come after the owner of the property, who in this case is the entity. But the holding company doesn't own the property. It owns the operating company. And so there's a separation called a corporate veil, and we want to keep that there.
Well, and these separations are critical. They're the ways that we firewall our properties. So if you see an attorney do a presentation on this, they'll often draw these walls, and the idea is we're trying to separate your property's behavior from your behavior. And it works both ways. If I own a rental house and I go out and accidentally get in an accident on the freeway and somebody gets severely injured or worse, dies, and now that person's estate or that person comes after me because it was my fault or there was negligence, they're going to sue the car manufacturer, they're going to sue the other guy, they're going to sue a lot of people. But ultimately, all my assets are exposed if I own the house in my name. The minute that I set up the proper structure, I can have firewall protection. So it protects my property from me, but it also protects me from my property. If on the very property, I have a tenant that slips and falls and breaks their leg, well, that tenant's going to have recourse against the entity. But if it's done properly and we follow the corporate formalities and those things, it's going to protect that liability from getting on my personal assets.
Yeah. I mean, say, for example, you have a financial difficulty in an operating business and you've got multiple operating businesses. Let's use Donald Trump, for example, because people are making a big deal about that, right? The guy has like 500 entities, all these operating businesses, some of which are extremely profitable with lots of money. And then he had a couple that didn't work out. All right. Well, you know, you can criticize his business acumen that he should never have a business that fails, whatever. Say what you want. I know it gets political.
Well, let's just face it, that more than 90% of all businesses formed in the United States ultimately fail.
Yeah, if you got 500 that make it and four that don't, I mean, I think that's pretty good.
Yeah, I think
but, you know, you be the judge. But the point is that under the law, which, you know, he uses, he was able to go bankrupt in a couple of those entities and get out from underneath those obligations without having to go attack the assets of both his personal assets and other business assets. And so the laws were designed to prevent, if you will, a fire from spreading. If a guy like Donald Trump, who creates assets, who creates jobs, who pays taxes, at least maybe not directly, let's say, but through his companies, at the end of the day, if one mistake could wipe out everything he owns, the law looks at that as a negative impact. So the law permits you as a prudent business person the opportunity to create firewalls. It's like having a ship. If you're on a ship and the ship starts to sink, those seawalls start to shut, so that what happens is the water, the leakage is contained in only one area and doesn't spread. Same with the fires. If you've ever been in a large building, there are firewalls. Those things close if there's a fire to prevent the fire from spreading. This is exactly what a properly designed entity structure will do for you. It prevents a liability in one asset from spreading to the others, and that's why you put it in place.
So it's not that complicated, and through working with an attorney, depending on the jurisdiction, meaning the state or country or place where you're going to have your entity formed and created and held, you're going to want to consult with someone to find out what those costs are and what the paperwork required is. But it's a pretty straightforward process. Don't let it intimidate you. We're not going to cover it soup to nuts on this show. Your mission is to go figure that out, because everybody has a different plan and a different style, a different entity of choice. But it's just a process, a legal process of creating documents, usually recording them somewhere, paying some registrar fees, and then maybe having a registered agent to accept service, meaning if there was some sort of litigation or action or communication necessary, it's not you at your house that gets the information, it's your entity at their mailing address. So these are the formalities we have, and we'll get into more when you talk about corporate formalities, how you sign documents and so forth. But setting up an entity is pretty straightforward. Now, even though Russ started by talking about the different types of entities, and there's even more types of entities, a management company, you might have a series LLC, there's all kinds of things. The most important thing is not to get overwhelmed and not to suffer from entity creep, which is just keep throwing an entity at it. Back to our original concept on this, your attorney's answer for everything is an entity. Well, that also is a billable thing, right? I'm not saying it's wrong. We have a lot of entities in our life, right? But we've also had a season where we've done way more entities than we've needed to. And everyone has annual fees, and everyone has time it takes, and everyone has paperwork, and many of them have tax forms. So you don't just form an entity because you went to some seminar about it. You form an entity because it makes structural sense for protecting your assets.
Yeah, so each entity serves a purpose within your structure or your entity plan. So think of it as the framework of a building. And you have a kitchen, it serves a purpose. You have a bedroom and it serves a purpose. You have an entertainment room or a garage, and they all serve unique purposes within your overall structure. So that's all an entity structure is. And so once you have the entity structure in place, now you have to begin to operate within that structure. So you layer on top of that a cash flow plan. The money shows who owns it. So if the money is being generated by an operating company, then the money should go directly into the operating company, even though ultimately it may end up in the holding company. It's got to go through the system instead of around the system, because otherwise you create a connection or a shortcut, if you will, from the liability to the asset. And so you want to make sure you are careful of your cash flow and what the cash flow says about respecting the separation between the rooms, the walls.
Cash flow both ways, expenses and income.
Correct. Both ways. And then also in terms of executing documents, because if I'm signing the document, it's easy just to sign my name and think, hey, I signed. But you aren't signing in your own name because you aren't a party to the transaction. That's the whole point. You are a representative. You are an authorized person of an entity that may be managing another entity that is actually entering into the deal. And when you sign, part of your corporate formalities is through your signature block, the way you describe yourself when you sign. In other words, it says print your name or sign your name and then print your name. The print your name is your name, the entity you're signing on behalf of, and if it's the manager of the entity actually contracting and doing the business on behalf of that entity. So it can get a little complicated, but you're putting the other person on the other side on notice who they're doing business with, and more importantly, who they're not doing business with.
You know, Russ, you do a lot of this because you are often the signatory for entities that manage other entities. And I know that you've become acutely aware of who am I in this moment? Who am I signing as? Because this is one of the easiest and most often made mistakes. 10 years later in court, the evidence against you is this your signature? And did you sign in your name or in the company's name? And there's your bare signature. That is you as a person. You don't ever want to sign you as a person unless you have the title of the property in your personal name.
Well, and it goes even further than that, because today, in today's world, so many people treat email as a casual conversation. And when you're conducting business, an email is really a written document. And if you put something in writing, it tends to carry more weight. And so you may be using your personal email account and then signing it with your personal name, and yet you're doing company business, and that creates an implication that you and the company are one and the same, or the company is an alter ego of you, and it begins to tear down that formality. And you know, the whole point of the structure is respecting the integrity of the structure. If you walk away from this little portion of the show with a concept, the concept is everything you do, from cash flow management to how you sign documents to how you hold title to assets, must respect the integrity of the structure. So you have to get a basic understanding of entity structuring, and then you have to make sure in actual practice, everything you do reinforces the separation, not blurs the lines.
And of course, like some buildings, you're going to have additions over time as you're acquiring more property and you're maybe doing more business, and maybe you have an operating business, a legitimate business that's outside of real estate, or maybe you have a property management company as well as an asset holding company. money, right? As you continue to build this house, the foundation changes, but the mindset's the same. Understanding that we put these entities, legal entities in place to make sure our structure is sound. When we come back, we'll talk about more ways you're going to protect your assets. After your foundation is built, you're not done. There's still more to do. We'll also play real estate trivia next. You're tuned to the Real Estate Guys radio program. I'm your host, Robert Helms.
Real estate investment advice right in your mailbox. Sign up for the free Real Estate Guys newsletter at realestateguysradio.com.
Are you ready to profit in paradise? Hi, it's Robert Helms. And if you think real estate investing means tenants, toilets, and termites, think again. Located just a short plane ride from the U.S., a virtually untouched paradise awaits. The beautiful country of Belize. When you go to Belize with the Real Estate Guys, you'll spend four fabulous days discovering one of the most intriguing real estate markets I've ever seen. With its jungle rainforest, pristine beaches, and 81-degree turquoise water, Belize is one of the most beautiful places on Earth. Plus, it's considered one of the top seven tax havens in the world. Belize property is on the rise, and many experts think the best is yet to come. But don't just take my word for it. Come experience Belize firsthand at our upcoming investor field trip. When you join us, you'll discover the many reasons we love Belize, like tremendously undervalued beachfront land, super low taxes, ease of doing business, and so much more. Get the details at realestateguysradio.com. Just click on events. See paradise for yourself. Click events at realestateguysradio.com, and I'll see you in beautiful Belize.
Hi, this is Lawrence Yun, Chief Economist with National Association of Realtors, and you are listening to The Real Estate Guys.
Welcome back to The Real Estate Guys radio program. Thanks for tuning into the show. We appreciate you. Hey, tell a friend about The Real Estate Guys radio program. We're talking today about protecting the assets you acquire as a real estate investor. Lots of things to think about there. Before we get back to that discussion, it's time to play real estate trivia. Your chance to win a prize by knowing today's real estate trivia question. Just a moment, I'm going to ask you a question that has something to do with real estate. When you hear it and think you know the answer, send us a quick email to trivia@realestateguysradio.com. trivia@realestateguysradio.com. If you're the first person with the right answer, you're going to receive a copy of an amazing book by the founder of REMAX, Dave Leniger, called My Next Step. That can be yours if you know today's real estate trivia question. Last week on the show, we were talking about coffee with David Sewell, and we asked this: which country grows the most coffee? The answer, by a lot, is Brazil, followed by Vietnam, and number three, Panama. Here's our real estate trivia question for this week. Name the only U.S. state without any national park system units, meaning there's no national parks, there's no monuments, seashores, historic sites, battlefields, memorials, none of that. We have only one state in the United States where there is no national park location. Which state? If you think you know or want to take a guess, just send your best guess to us to trivia@realestateguysradio.com. Include your answer to the question, your name, and your physical mailing address, because if you're the winner, we're going to send you a copy of My Next Step by Dave Leniger. That's today's real estate trivia question. We're talking about getting your house in order from an asset protection and risk mitigation standpoint, and your house is in order and other properties. How do I make sure that my plan to hold my properties keeps them as safe as they can possibly be against predators, against my actions, against all the things that could go wrong in real estate? So before the break, we were talking about structure and how we use legal entities like corporations and LLCs and IBCs, perhaps, international business corporations, if we're in other countries, how we use those entities together to create the foundation of our portfolio. Once we've got that figured out and we're signing in the right way and we're putting our contracts in the right names and all those things, the next thing is to think about other risks can happen, because while a entity will firewall the problem to that one asset, the fire itself is a problem.
Well, yeah. So again, going back to this analogy, if you will, of this structure you're creating being like a building and you're a developer. So you've got the bones, you've got the framework in place, the basic entity structure, the legal structures. You've got dividing lines. You're following your corporate formalities. That's great. Now you got to kind of decorate it a little bit, put the wall coverings in and stuff, because that's part of the structure. If you just have open walls, then you've got the framework, but there's no drywall, then the wind blows right through from one room to the other, right? So you want to begin to set your insurance policies, if you will, to to think of them as like beginning to do some of the finish work. So the insurance policies in a lot of ways are your first line of defense. Actually, probably your second. Your first line of defense we opened up the show with, which is good business practices, right? Don't get sued in the first place. But the fact of the matter is you could make an honest mistake or something could go wrong. Obviously, insurance and entity structures don't prevent you from being a bad actor. So don't think you can create these structures and get away with cheating people or
fraud,
being a bad person.
Misrepresentation.
But if you're out there honestly working hard to do a good job and somebody does something or you do something and it's unintended and there's a liability created, then you want to make sure that the first line of defense, once that liability is created, is going to be your insurance. And that's a whole topic. I mean, we've done whole shows on that. We encourage you to go back into the archives and look up the show that we did on insurance. It was great. But you're going to have commercial general liability insurance, which is just like your personal liability insurance. It's what we call slip and fall, right? If something goes wrong and you're operating a company that's doing business, you have commercial general liability. And that's all that is. The next types of policies, other kind of policies you might have, in addition to things like hazard policies, or if there's a fire insurance policy, replacement policy, things like that, that actually protect the asset. But we're talking now liability, are going to be things like errors and omissions insurance. If you have formed a management company to make management decisions, you are making professional decisions about managing your portfolio, especially if you're doing that on behalf of third-party investors, if you're syndicating. So if you bring on an investment partner, you now have an obligation to them to make good business decisions. Well, if you forget to do something or you make a mistake doing something, an error or an omission, you need to have a policy, just like a lawyer has malpractice, like a doctor has malpractice, just like a CPA has malpractice. You, as an asset manager, need to have that malpractice. That's called errors and omissions insurance. There's another type of policy called D&O, or directors and officers insurance. And what that does is when you, as a natural human, a person, a human being, are signing a document, but you are acting on behalf of the entity as an officer, like a president or a vice president, you're signing the document. Or if you're on the board of directors and you're hiring and firing the officers, which could be you, you might be the only person on the board of directors, and you might be the only person executing the documents on your behalf. But as you grow your company, that begins to change, and you'll be more on the board and less on signing the documents as the officer. So to protect the person personally for the acts that they do on behalf of the entity can purchase policy called directors and officers insurance that indemnify you, so that if for some reason there is a judgment against you for an act you did on behalf of the company, that policy would pay on your behalf. So it protects your personal assets from acts you do as a decision maker in the structure as a director and officer. Those are the main ones. The only other one that we really think a lot of people miss is employment practices liability. And that is if you have people working for you directly, you're clearly going to have that along with workman's comp. But where people miss it is when you hire an agent. That is somebody who's working on your behalf, and they have employees, and this is especially true in property management. Then a good attorney, if you don't have it structured properly, can sometimes make the case that the acts of the employee of your agent are your liability. Again, we're not going to get too much into the weeds. Go visit with your insurance coverage counsel, which is one of the people you're going to want to have on your team, not your insurance broker. You need an insurance broker to sell you the policy, for sure. But you're going to want to have an insurance attorney who reviews the policy and makes sure that what you actually do and the liabilities you're actually exposed to are actually covered by the type of policy you bought. Having insurance that doesn't pay makes you feel good until you need it. Having insurance that pays when you need it makes you feel good until you need it, and it makes you feel even better when you need it.
Insurance companies are in the business, frankly, of denying claims. They're looking for a reason not to have to pay. That's not a slight against who they are as people. That's just their business model, right? They want to make sure that what you paid to have covered is covered. And so they're going to explore every option. Another thing your insurance coverage counsel can do is represent you in those types of scenarios. Now, that doesn't mean you have to go out and get 7 different insurance policies and hire 2 more attorneys. It's just to acquaint you with the playing field. When you start out and you have maybe an umbrella policy for your general liability, that might be enough with a single rental house or two. You make that decision. But you want to sit down with a great commercial insurance person, especially someone that understands property policies and does those types of policies, ask around for a great referral in your area. And then you want to make sure that that's vetted through Insurance Coverage Council. It's a few hundred dollars more to have them look for a policy. In fact, sometimes those guys can make recommendations about the most reputable insurance companies in a particular area or industry.
Yeah, well, I mean, these attorneys are going into court on a fairly regular basis, working out either in the courtroom or in the arbitration or mediation room, negotiations, and they know which companies are more likely to pay, less likely to pay. And again, at the end of the day, yes, you want to save money, but you want to make sure you get what you bargained for. And if the discount insurance company has a reputation for being horribly terrible at paying, then, you know, if you're buying an insurance policy to satisfy a lender or satisfy some third party, and you really don't care if it ever pays or not, then buy the cheap policy. But if you're really buying it to provide a function if and when you ever need it, then make sure that it's going to be from a reputable company that's financially sound, that has the wherewithal to pay on the claim, and is more inclined to be customer service oriented at claim time, not just at sales time. And believe it or not, there is a difference. And the people who know what that differences are the people who fight with those guys every day to get them to pay.
I find it funny that you ask a guy who fights with insurance companies who the best insurance companies are to fight with, but that's really what it comes down to. So we've talked about entity selection and structure a bit, and we've talked about insurance. When we come back, we'll talk about other considerations to avoid risk and make sure your assets are protected. You're tuned to the Real Estate Guys radio program. I'm your host, Robert Helms.
Need help with your real estate investment portfolio? Check out the resources page at realestateguysradio.com.
Memphis is famous for being the home of the king of rock and roll, but it's also the king of cash flow. If you're looking for affordable cash flow properties, it's hard to beat Memphis. Get your portfolio rocking and more cash flowing your way by calling Terry Kerr at Mid-South Home Buyers. Terry's the king of turnkey properties. Contact Terry through the resource section at realestateguysradio.com. And be sure to order Terry's Tips for Turnkey Rental Property Investing Report. It's free. Just send your request to turnkey@realestateguysradio.com.
Hi, this is Patrick from Paradigm Life. I've recently written an ebook called The Perpetual Wealth Strategy. The ebook discusses one of the best investments, real estate, combined with a financial vehicle used by the wealthy, many US presidents, famous actors, athletes, and even Houdini himself. You can download the ebook for free in the resources section on the Real Estate Guys Radio homepage. Don't wait, go download it now.
Hi, I'm Aaron Catusa, the chairman of Catusa Research. You're listening to The Real Estate Guys.
Welcome back to The Real Estate Guys radio program. Thanks for tuning into the show. If you're not sure what you're going to be when you grow up, if you want to get some clarity into your life, come on out and join us for Create Your Future. It's the 2017 Goals Retreat. It takes place in San Diego, California, the very first weekend of the new year. Make sure 2017 is your best year yet. All the details on our website at realestateguysradio.com under events. We're talking today about asset protection and risk mitigation, how we make sure that this portfolio we spend all this time building remains safe and secure. We talked about structures and entities. We talked about insurance. Now we want to talk about the realities of doing some of those things, and then we'll kind of end, I think, with some privacy and some little tips and techniques that we've learned over the years. But, you know, it's one thing to say, well, I should own a property in an LLC, a single-purpose LLC that I set up for that exclusive purpose. That's probably true, but there are some challenges with that. Like, for example, if you want to get a loan, most lenders are not going to make a loan to your single-purpose LLC.
And there's kind of a deeper explanation there, which is in residential 1-4.
Yeah.
Right. And the reason is in residential 1-4, most of those loans are subsidized through Fannie and Freddie, government in the USA anyway, subsidized loans. And so the government puts restrictions on it. And one of the restrictions are, we're not doing this to allow business people and corporations to get cheaper loan rates. We're doing this to facilitate individuals to be able to buy homes. But we'll open that up to residential 1-4. So 2 units, 3 units, 4 residential units, a duplex, triplex, or fourplex, but single family.
Right. Because on the commercial side, it's absolutely possible to get loans made to an LLC. It's how almost all deals are done. And same thing with insurances and everything. But again, if we're starting out taking the premise that it's mostly going to be 1-4 units, you're absolutely right. That's the area we're talking about.
Yeah. And so here's the key. So the reason that is because the underwriting for those particular loans, they want to be able to sell those loans in the secondary market with the backstop being Fannie or Freddie. You can't sell a loan made to an entity in the residential 1-4 space to Fannie or Freddie because they won't accept them. So that's really where the restriction comes from. Now, there are private lenders that are happy to do it. You're going to pay more for that service, and you just have to trade off. Am I willing to pay more points and more interest in order to have a loan made to my entity and enjoy asset protection? Or am I willing to be on the property in my own name and get a cheaper mortgage? That's a business decision. You might be able to structure your other assets in such a way that if you were to get sued personally, they still couldn't get at them. That's a different discussion. So I always say do the math, and the math will tell you what to do. You have to weigh off the cost and the hassle of doing one or the other. To me, the quickest thing to do is just ratchet up as quick as you can to commercial properties and start building that way. Typically, people who are on their first few houses don't have so much that they're going to end up being a great target for an aggressive attorney, and your insurance is going to be adequate protection. I know there's a ton of attorneys out there that would disagree with me. That's okay, because I'm not a lawyer. I'm not giving anybody advice. I'm just suggesting, and from a practical point of view, in the beginning, tax mitigation, reducing interest costs, those are usually more important. Get the most bang for your limited resources. When you climb up the ladder and you have more of your assets exposed, to quote George Ross, well, now you're going to be willing to invest in more expensive loans, insurance policies, entity structures to protect those, because you have more to lose.
Well, this is the whole thing about this being reality-based. It's one thing to just say, yeah, everything should be an LLC. You go to, you're an attorney, and you say, I want to buy these three single-family houses that are in a, you know, B-plus neighborhood, and they have long-term tenants, and your attorney's likely to tell you three individual LLCs. Personally, I look at that risk and say, I'd be willing to put all three of those properties in a single LLC. They all have a fairly low risk in terms of the tenant base, in terms of the physicality. They're insured. I'm not suggesting you do this. I'm saying for me, rather than create three entities with three fees and three registrars and three renewal fees, I'm comfortable with putting those three houses in one entity. If I'm buying a C-class apartment building that's in the middle of a rehab, I'm going to want that in its own entity. If I'm doing a development project with construction and active crews and people on scaffolding and all, I'm going to have that in its own entity. So part of the decision is the reality-based part. So you can start at one level, and maybe you already have in your portfolio, and then as you increase your holdings, as you continue to come up the ladder, as George would say, as a real estate investor, then you start to explore these other things. I think there's some practical things we can share when it comes to this. One of the mistakes we see people make is they get the idea of having a holding company, which, as you explained very well, Russ, is a company that isn't doing business with anybody. It's designed to be kind of a safe haven treasure box. And then they name it after their kids, making it very obvious whose it is, or put their own name in it. So I think there's some things you can do that are, one, privacy, but also just good practice to be thinking about.
Well, privacy is huge, because there's two categories. You know, there are people who are just out there, and they're predators, the ambulance chasers, if you will, the people that are out there looking for somebody with deep pockets to go after. All right. And I know I'm probably stepping on a lot of lawyers' toes. I'm sorry. If you're a good practitioner, good for you. But there are people out there that are opportunistic. There are plaintiffs out there that are opportunistic, you know. Something goes wrong, I'm going to sue. Why? Because I can, right? They're entitled somehow to some windfall. People who have been genuinely damaged, well, sure. And the person who damaged them has an obligation. And, you know, it's a difference of opinion about, you know, how much somebody is owed and all that. And that all gets figured out. But for the people who are just purely looking for deep pockets, they can do things, you know, they can do asset searches. They can just do routine things. It's very easy. You'd be shocked how easy it is to go down. If you got a bunch of equity in a property, I can go down to a title company, pull a list, and find everybody in a community that has gobs of equity. I can do that as an investor. I can do that as a mortgage guy.
I can do that as a predator.
You can do that as a predator. So now you know, well, who's the fattest fish? Who can I go after? I'm going to go trip on that guy's lawn because there's equity in that property. You got to understand, we don't think that way, but we're trying to protect ourselves from people who do. If you structure yourself properly, they can't find those things.
Well, that's the first line of defense in a lawsuit. Imagine something happens in the future, and through no fault of your own, you find yourself in the wrong end of a lawsuit. The first thing any plaintiff's lawyer does is check you out to see if you have assets going after. Sorry for the harsh, cold reality, but that's the deal. The attorney won't take the case if they don't think they can get money out of you.
Well, they will if they think they can get money out of the plaintiff. the person who wants to sue you, they're called the plaintiff, and they're going to make a complaint against you and go after you. But if this person is exaggerating or just treasure hunting, witch hunting, if you will, then they're not going to want to pay the attorney out of their own pocket. They're looking for something for free. So they're going to say, hey, Mr. Attorney, would you take this case on contingency, meaning you only get paid if you win? Well, the first thing the attorney's going to do is look at the merits of the case. Is it winnable? And the second thing they're going to look at is, if I win, is there anything to go get? They say, well, okay, this looks like I could probably find a way to squeeze out a judgment or at least shake the guy down and say, hey, look, it's going to cost you $100,000 to defend. Just pay me $50,000 and we'll go away. So it's just easy money. That's why these frivolous lawsuits get filed, right? You could make the argument for tort reform and blah, 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 but that's not the world we live in. That's the way the game is played. So we have to deal with it.
That is the world we live in some of the other markets we're in, thankfully, where it's not the same. But in the litigious U.S., it's definitely like that.
So what you do is you need to show up in the public record as poor. And the guy goes, well, this guy doesn't have any money to go after. So therefore, Mr. Plaintiff, you're going to have to pay me a retainer and you're going to pay my hourly rate. And then all of a sudden the person says, well, I don't want that. I'm just looking for a free lunch. Well, the lawyer says, I don't see much there, but you really got a great case. You really got a great case. Why? Because I want you to write me the retainer and I want you to pay my hourly fee. A lot of times people go, and again, I know I'm stepping on a lot of lawyers' toes right now, but we learned this the hard way. Most lawyers are great, but there are some out there who are going to tell a client that they have a better case than they really do and keep them in the fight longer than they should stay because they get fees. And you just have to understand that financial motivation. The easiest way to mitigate this is just not be low-hanging fruit. If somebody really, really wants to get you and you really have things, they have ways to find you. What you want to do is climb so far up the tree that you're just not that ripe apple hanging down in arm's reach. You want to be way, way up the tree where they can't get you.
Robert Kiyosaki says that you should own nothing but control everything, meaning that it shouldn't be in your own name. You shouldn't be easy to find and easy to get. So that's one of the quick techniques, is just make sure your holding company is as anonymous as possible. Another technique is the way that we hire our professionals, because sometimes, like when I hire an attorney, there's this wonderful thing called attorney-client privilege.
Yeah, and this one's huge, because if you think about the people who really know where everything is, it's the people who keep your books. It's the people that prepare your tax returns, your CPA.
Your property manager, maybe.
Yeah, so there's people who know where things are. And so when something goes sideways, these people can be subpoenaed and deposed, and they have to say what they know, unless it's your attorney. Your attorney can't do that. You have a thing called attorney-client privilege. And so you can hire certain professionals through your attorney in order to have a cloak, if you will, over the information. In other words, you're going to have to go through your attorney to try to get to this information. It's a barrier. It's an impediment. Does it cost more? Yes, of course. Your attorney's not going to do this for free. Is it worth it? 100% up to you. It just depends. You have to decide whether the privacy component, whether the impediment component is worth it to you. So we are going to raise far more questions that we're going to answer in a show like this. But the goal is that you have an understanding of the basic components and that you have an understanding of some of the things that you maybe didn't even understand before, so that when you begin to look at your own portfolio, your own plans, and then you go meet with your own professionals, you begin to ask them questions about things you've learned in this show, and then you're going to go from professional to professional to professional, and then you're going to get differences of opinion, and then you're going to have to begin to decide as a business person how to meld all that together into an actionable plan. I see too often people get completely confused because they're looking for one of their professionals to tell them the final answer. And I can tell you from experience, you're not going to find that. If you find the person who does that for you, call me. Right? Because I've had to learn how to figure this out on my own, and that's why I have a lot of energy on it. But it's hard work, and there is no one-size-fits-all answer.
But there is one great technique, and this is something that few people do. You get them in a room. You get them on a conference call. You get your attorney and your tax professional and whoever else you have speaking into your life on a call. Is that a more expensive call? You bet it is. Part of what today's designed to do is to save you a ton of fees. Rather than sit with an attorney for 2 hours and have them teach you asset protection, learn about asset protection and go in with a very bulleted point-by-point question list that you can get answered in 15 minutes instead of 2 hours. That saves you hundreds of dollars. But understand that getting the professionals talking together can save you money in the long run. Cost you a little more right now, not only save you money, get you the right answer. Now, it's always the right answer for you. So again, think about your legal entity structure, think about your insurances, and think about privacy moving forward. lots to cover, more than we possibly could. And again, we've raised questions. Your mission is to go out and get the answers. Have fun with it. Good luck with it. Keep yourself protected. Next week on The Real Estate Guys, we're going to talk about a great, important group of folks in the world. Those are the millennials, the folks who are coming up today. They think differently. They act differently. We don't know how they think, but our guest is a successful millennial who's going to give us some of that insight, and we're going to share some really cool stuff with you you probably hadn't have thought to ask. That's next week. Until then, go out and make some equity happen.
This episode of the Real Estate Guys Radio Show is brought to you by Paradigm Life, powerful cash management strategies using life insurance. Learn more at beyourbank.com. Mid-South Home Buyers, low-cost, turnkey cash flow properties in Memphis, Tennessee. Corporate Direct, asset protection strategies for real estate investors from attorney and rich dad advisor Garrett Sutton. Find these and other great companies under the Resources tab at realestateguysradio.com. To learn how you can expose your product or service to the Real Estate Guys audience, call 888-489-7723 extension 4. That's 888-489-7723 extension 4. Or use the feedback page at realestateguysradio.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week right here on the Real Estate Guys Radio Show.